Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Harmony Foundation podcast series. I'm really excited today to be joined with Jessica Joyner with Journey Inspired Counseling out of Parker, Colorado. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi, thank you.
So good to have you here. We're looking forward to hearing a little bit more about your practice and the work that you do in behavioral health. I loved reading your philosophy on your website. You talk about advocating for social justice issues and equality. How has this played into the career path you've chosen? It seems like a really interesting journey that you've taken in getting started.
Yeah, well, being a minority and growing up really in a mostly all white community has really always kind of given me that social justice lens. So just always have had it. And so falling into social work just kind of seemed like a natural path. Obviously, because social work really, a huge component of that is social justice. So I really love advocating for people and really kind of working on equity issues for everyone. So that's just kind of how I fell into it. It's just kind of a natural progression, I guess.
And what sort of issues specifically do you focus on? Like, what are your areas of interest when you talk about equality issues and social justice issues?
Really, the equity issues are anything that's kind of social justice related right now in today's times. So anything that has to do with any of the isms, racism, sexism, ableism, ageism. So any of those kind of things that where equity or inequitable practices show up, that's really kind of where I like to step in and fight for those who are on the receiving end of being inequitably treated. And so really what I do is, I mean, anybody who has had any of those kind of instances in their lives or experiences, they can come in and we can talk about those. I also not only like to bring that into sessions if that's what people want to talk about, but also, I mean, I do that outside of therapy and outside of my practice, or as a I don't know what it, in addition to, if you will. It's an important piece of what I mean, I just have that social justice kind of systemic lens. Whether that looks like, you know, working with somebody individually or even looking at something bigger on a more macro level of policy and procedure kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think it's so vital because there's so many issues that come up that really trigger individuals, particularly those that come into our program that have been traumatized by some of the very issues that you're talking about that can really contribute. And in our case, when we're dealing with clients, if we're not addressing some of those issues, they can be relapse triggers that really do contribute to people's ability to stay sober. So it's nice to be able to interact with someone who's a social worker who has those kinds of capacities, because I think sometimes it's overlooked.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, studies have shown that, you know, microaggressions and kind of being on the receiving end of microaggressions on a consistent and constant basis really do have health effects, both physical and mental health ramifications. And so I think we dismiss that oftentimes and we just don't think about it. And so when people are really suffering from a culmination of that, it's important to talk about it. It's important to have that that ability to make them feel safe in order to talk about those things.
So let's kind of go down that path a little bit, because I've not heard the term microaggressions. What does that mean when you say that?
So microaggressions are little comments that are often said, whether they're comments or even sometimes behaviors that are often said or done without kind of malice intent, but on the receiving end, it makes the person feel like other or less than. And so because of that, it's an indication to the person on the receiving end of that they somehow don't belong, or that they're a novelty, or that, again, that they just, that there's something different, that they don't belong to that in group.
And so from somebody who is, so from an awareness standpoint, I mean, as we're looking at this idea of microaggressions, what could you say to listeners today around how they can be mindful of the, probably the the lack of awareness around some of the language or some of the behaviors that they're doing that can be considered a microaggression.
Right. I think it's really important to obviously be culturally aware and culturally sensitive, but oftentimes people think they are and they're still not. And this all has to deal with biases and the fact that we all have biases and we have to recognize our own in order to not participate in microaggressions and to be really aware and fully aware of what we're saying and how we're saying it. There are just different things about, I don't know if I can give you an example of a microaggression is, I'll speak for myself when I tell people that I'm, Mexican and Native American and, I'm multiracial, they often, I guess because I can look very racially ambiguous, if you will. Mm-hmm. When I say that I'm a minority, people will say, well, what are you?
Right.
And that's a microaggression because it's like, well, I'm human, mm-hmm. first of all. And yeah. Then if you would like to know what my ethnicity is, you can ask that. But, people will just say, well, what are you? And just because I'm biracial or anybody who's biracial or multiracial, just because we're of that group doesn't mean that we're not human and doesn't right. make us a what.
Right. I like that. It's a very good example to play. And it's one that's probably so commonplace in our culture that mm-hmm. people don't even see it that way. So it's obviously a lot of work needs to be done around awareness because I think I'm probably falling into that as well.
Right. And I think a lot of people do and they just don't know it. And they would say, and maybe you even have this belief of, well, I don't feel like I'm racist. I don't feel like I'm biased in that way. But when we have some of those microaggressions, it does show a bias and it does show that we have some underlying beliefs that even though we may not consciously think are there, unconsciously they are, which is again, part of what unconscious or implicit bias is, which leads to microaggressions.
So do you have a recommendation of a resource that if somebody were to become more aware or educated around this, is there a particular mentor or coach or someone that you can recommend that people can read or learn more about?
Well, I'm actually giving a talk on this in August. And so it's with Highlands Behavioral Health. So I'm not trying to plug somebody else.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Talk a little bit about where and when so that people can get more information about it.
Yeah, it's in August and I apologize. I don't, tell you later when exactly it is.
We'll put it in the notes. We'll put it in the show notes for people to access later.
Okay, that would be great. So I am giving a talk on bias and what that looks like and how it shows up. And it's for anybody, but specifically it's for other therapists or people who are in this field, who work with clients on a everyday basis and how our biases show up sometimes even when we don't know it. And we need to be aware of it because it can really have a negative impact on our clients and what that negative impact can really look like. So that's kind of what the discussion is about or the topic. And so I'll kind of be going through a lot of that stuff, but there's a lot of other resources out there. So online, if you would just plug in what is a microaggression and a bunch of stuff will come up regarding that. There's different studies. There's different examples of what microaggressions are. If anybody would just want to Google and put in implicit bias, they can get a lot of information that way as well. So the talk that I'm giving, like I said, is all about just kind of bringing into awareness that we all have biases. It doesn't matter who we are. We all have them. It's how we deal with them and how important it is to recognize them so that we don't, impose that in a negative way on somebody else.
Well, that's great. And I really appreciate us taking a couple minutes to talk about this because it's so necessary. And I'll probably be tapping into you later to see how we might be able to get you up to Harmony to do an in-service similar to that for our clients and staff.
That's great. Yeah.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk more about your practice specifically, Journey Inspired Counseling. So I'm always curious about the names that our partners pick for their practice. What was it that inspired you to name your practice Journey Inspired Counseling?
I think we all go on journeys, and I think, a lot of times those are really tough and hard journeys that we go through. And I think some of those lessons that we learn during those times can really inspire us and inspire other people to keep going and to keep persevering and to keep moving forward. And so that was kind of my thought behind some of that. It also kind of ties in with what I'm doing as far as working with athletes. And so kind of my tagline there is, you know, journey inspired counseling, an athlete's path to recovery and wellness. Mm. So just kind of the path that we all take, the path that we take that kind of gets us in a spot where we need recovery and wellness, or sometimes even just the path that we may not be in a bind, but we're still on this journey and we're still trying to be our best selves. So sometimes it doesn't have to be out of a crisis, and it doesn't have to be for any particular reason other than we're just kind of living our lives and putting one foot in front of the other. But we all have a journey and we all have a story to tell.
I really like that. And it's true. It's very positive and uplifting for people who are coming in and looking at trying to figure out how they want to work on themselves to improve. So I'm gonna throw an extra question in there, because you kind of alluded to it in the earlier question regarding the work that you do with athletes. I know when we spoke, when you were at Harmony, you talked a little bit more about the relationship that you're building around working with athletes. Why do you think that's so important to create a specialty track, if you will, in working with athletes? What's the differentiator for them?
Well, I think there's a different mentality with athletes. There's a different kind of drive and a different kind of ambition sometimes with athletes. I mean, if you're going to be in a sport and you're going to give your all and you're going to always want to excel, there's just kind of a different mentality that goes along with that. You know, it kind of comes with the if their goal is to end up being like a collegiate and then a pro and, you know, so on and so on, is to consistently get to a higher level, there has to be a certain mentality of, you know, sacrifice and giving things up and really working at a different level than other people. And that doesn't mean that this excludes anybody else. I mean, I think this shows up in other areas as well. But I do think that becoming an elite athlete, they just have this different drive, and it's a different mentality. It's the different different way of approaching things. A lot of times it's do whatever it takes, even if that means to the detriment of my health. Mm. And oftentimes that's at the detriment of their physical and mental health. Mm-hmm. And I also think my particular interest for athletes is really obviously the behavioral and mental health of that. Because I do think that oftentimes where the physical health is really addressed often, if they break a leg or if they tear, you know, a hamstring or whatever, that's easily addressable and fixable. The mental health side kind of goes unnoticed and it goes unaddressed, mm-hmm. which I think year after year or, you know, month after month of that, the athletes really suffer, which can then, again, have the cumulative effect or the of having the... Sorry, I totally lost my train of thought.
Well, one of the things that I think I've learned over the years in working with athletes, particularly high-performing athletes, is that when they do suffer an injury, the emotional and mental setback that they have really does do a number on them, because they have identified themselves so strongly with being a high-performance athlete that they really struggle with identifying themselves as being, I hate to say it, but being human and having the ability to break down. And reconcile with that. So I'm assuming you deal with a lot of that as well.
Right. So a lot of those identity issues, just like you said. So whether it's because of injury or because they are retiring just because mm-hmm. of age and they're done with the sport. And that doesn't have to mean just a pro either. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, if it's somebody who is a very avid rock climber or hiker, and now age is just really taking its toll and they can't do what they used to do. Mm-hmm. it does have a very big impact on how they view themselves and their own identity issues. Who am I outside of this? What does that look like? What does my life look like when I can't perform and when I can't do the sport that I love and that has really taken me to where I am today? What do I do now?
Right.
So really working around those identity issues, working around even if beforehand as they're working up to potentially being maybe an elite athlete, what is the adjustment from one level to the next? And what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And just the differences in environment and culture and level of play, you know, what does that look like?
Yeah, you've done, your practice is very, very specific. I mean, I'm sure you address a lot of other sort of common areas that come up around anxiety and depression and so forth. But the fact that you've got this really unique approach and looking at the equality issues and the microaggression along with this now specialty track of working with athletes, it really has created a definition of your expertise, which is great. And so I'm hoping those that listen today can see that, you know, you do have these areas of specialty that can be really beneficial.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
So we always like to get to know the person behind the practice. So I'm going to ask you a couple off questions. Are you okay with that?
Sure.
Perfect. So what book or books have you given most as a gift and why?
Well, I don't know that I really give a whole lot of books, but I do recommend. And so pretty much anything by Brené Brown, I think I love, and I think most people in this field do. Mm-hmm. But for people who are not in the field, when I recommend, they're, you know, kind of like, oh yeah, great. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole different way of learning and perspective. And I think she just always puts things into an easy way to understand, very user-friendly, understandable, and relatable way to explain, you know, different things that go on in all of our lives. Mm-hmm. And obviously she normalizes it and kind of, again, she's got that whole series on shame. And so really helps people learn how to take the shame out of things. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's one of my favorites as well. And I think she's incredibly like the 21st century influencer, I think, in regards to what she's been able to do, like you said, to normalize the issues around what goes on in everyday life, but also looking at shame and resiliency.
Right. Yes.
So what are 1 to 3 books that that have greatly influenced your life?
Well, I would say some from Brené Brown. I really like, what is the one called? Actually I have it written down. Hold on 1 second. Let me look.
Mine is Rising Strong. I love Rising Strong.
Uh-huh. I like that. I like, I thought it was me, but it wasn't. Oh. I thought it was just me, but it wasn't. That one is kind of talks about, what is that one? Oh, it's the journey from what will people think of me to I am enough.
Mm. I am enough.
Yeah.
We need to use that a resounding all the time, don't we? So
yeah.
Use that. And it influenced your life in what way?
Well, I think just like everybody, we all have insecurities and we all have things that we feel like aren't good enough. And so just recognizing that we all are, that we all have great characteristics and strengths and abilities that maybe other people don't have, or that we try to... Well, let me start over. So strengths, abilities, and characteristics that I think are important and unique to ourselves. And I think that we all have something to offer. And so just recognizing that it's okay to have some insecurities, but to also know that you are enough, that what you have is good enough. Mm-hmm. And that's all you need. Mm-hmm. And to be proud of what you have and who you are, which I think is, you know, a lot of times it's much easier said than done. And like anybody else, I've struggled with that, about feeling like I am enough, feeling like I should do X, Y, or Z better, or I should have gotten my degree a long time ago, or, you know, I'm behind on things, and, you know, just different, there's always different insecurities I think that we all have. But to also be able to tell ourselves through those insecurities that we're enough, that we're okay who we are. It's okay to, it's okay to still want to be better, but it's also okay with who we are innately.
Yeah, it's interesting how we live in a society today where we spend a lot of time comparing ourselves to others, and there's so many outlets that put us in that position. So that message of we are enough needs to be at the forefront of our minds all the time when we're watching social media or looking at stuff on TV or doing a lot of comparisons. So I'm with you on that one. We are definitely enough. So, so if I were to offer up the word harmony, what do you think it means to live a life in harmony?
I think it's about really being about balance, balance and acceptance, you know, just really being able to have acceptance for ourselves and balance in our lives. Balance being, you know, between work and all the extracurriculars that we have and kids and, you know, trying to do fun things and all the responsibilities, but just being able to have some balance in all of that. Mm-hmm. And I think when we have some of that balance, we're also able to have more acceptance for ourselves, because then maybe we're not as hard on ourselves about not taking care of some of those responsibilities and just living in the moment and being able to have fun with our kids or our family or our friends and not be thinking about, well, there's 10 other things about responsibility things that I have to do. So really not living in the moment and really enjoying where you are. I think that's what's important about that balance piece, because then we can accept that it's okay to have fun, and then that the other responsibility things will also be taken care of because we have time for that as well.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And for those that are listening, if they wanted to access services at Journey Inspired Counseling, how could they get in touch with you?
They can go to my website, which is journeyinspiredcounseling.com. They can also email me at jessica.joiner@journeyinspiredcounseling.com. It's really long, sorry. And then that has my, my website has all my other information on it. So it has my website. I mean, it has my email as well as my phone number and the address of my practice in Parker.
That sounds great. Jessica, thank you so much for taking time with us today so that we could learn a little bit about you and a lot more about Journey Inspired Counseling. Harmony Foundation looks forward to working with you. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
And stopped recording.